I'd like to welcome Marlene Lockheed. Marlene is the former sector manager and interim education director of the World Bank and currently teaches international education policy at Princeton University. She was the vice president for the American Educational Research Association and a member of the National Academy of Sciences Board on International Education. Dr. Lockheed has advised developing country governments, donor agencies, and private groups on reforms for educational equality, gender equity, and school effectiveness. She's the author or co-author of more than 150 publications, including the internationally recognized Improving Primary Education in Developing Countries, which is widely cited internationally. So we're really honored and looking forward to hearing Marlene is going to reflect on gender and social exclusion in developing countries. Thank you.
Thank you. Many thanks to the organizers for inviting me to this very stimulating conference. I recognize that I am the last thing between you and your lunch, so I will try to be quick in going through this. I just would like to mention that what my remarks today are based on two books written by my colleague Maureen Lewis and myself while we were visiting fellows at the Center for Global Development. And these books are available online and at no cost. And there's a little pamphlet outside from the Center for Global Development that shows where the books come from. Basically, what we did in these two books, one is a book of readings of country case studies, the other is a synthesis of the literature, was to investigate intensively what the empirical evidence was about girls and schooling from the point of view of social exclusion. And what I want to talk about today is just that girls from socially excluded groups are a particularly vulnerable group. And so we looked at what kept girls from these socially excluded groups out of school and what works to reach and teach them, and somewhat to what donors can do. The numbers, of course, you've seen before, 72 million children out of school in 2006, about 40 million girls. We estimate that about 70% of the out-of-school girls come from socially excluded groups. So who are these groups? Well, they're stigmatized groups, ethnically different groups, groups according low status in their own culture, like caste groups, and groups that are involuntary minority groups. They vary enormously across regions. So in the sub-Saharan Africa, we see populations that are other than the dominant tribe, and there's lots of tribalism there. In South Asia, it's the Dalits, lower castes, and tribes, and rural populations. In the Middle East, it's primarily Berbers and rural populations. In Latin America, indigenous and Afro-Latinos. And East Asia, typically hill tribes, religious minorities, and ethnic minorities. And in Eastern Europe and Central Asia, the Roma and rural populations. So enormous variation across regions. What we see is the largest share of girls out of school in Latin America, East Asia, and ECA come from these socially excluded groups. There are many more children out of school, of course, in Africa and South Asia, but it's the share of those out of school that come from these socially excluded groups that are particularly a problem in those three regions. Just to give a quick example, in Latin America, indigenous girls are least likely to enroll in school. This chart shows that indigenous girls age 7 to 24 are least likely to have ever been enrolled in school in Guatemala. And as a consequence, only 26% of indigenous non-Spanish-speaking girls complete primary school, compared with 62% of Spanish-speaking girls. Similarly, in Laos, this is a terrible graph, but down here at the bottom, we have rural females who come from the non-majority group. The majority Lao Thai group is up at the top, but the non-Lao Thai minority girls complete fewer than 2 years of schooling compared to majority Lao Thai girls in urban settings that complete 8 years of school. So it's a particularly focused group that we're paying attention. In ECA, we have fewer Roma who complete secondary education as compared to non-Roma in all these regions. So what keeps these girls out of school? And we look at three areas, which would be administrative or legal barriers, the poor quality and limited supply of education, and the low demand for girls' education. From the point of view of administrative and legal barriers, we identified five basic areas, some of which have been touched on before. And I'll just give a couple of examples of how this works. An administrative or legal barrier on fixed number of schools per community. In Pakistan, for example, there is a no co-education rule for government schools. That requires communities to provide separate schools for boys and girls. Since this creates an economic hardship in rural schools where most socially excluded groups live, they only build the school for the boys and the girls don't go to school. Language of instruction has a similar kind of impact, differential impact for girls. When there's a language of instruction that is not the mother tongue, hello, help, it's hibernating. When there's a language of instruction that's not that for the mother tongue, with Berber-speaking children in Morocco or Kurdish-speaking children in Turkey, the boys have an opportunity to learn this language from their fathers or from in the market. The girls who are sequestered for cultural reasons never get exposed to the language of instruction preschool. So when they hit the school, the boys have a subtle advantage over them by having been exposed. And we also find this in tracking, where this selection examinations and tracking exclude many children from more demanding programs and limit future opportunities. Some girls have separate vocational tracks for girls and boys, some countries, and often the girls' track prepares them for lower-paying occupations. The consequence is that socially excluded children are more likely to be enrolled in vocational tracks. Then the girls in these vocational tracks are more likely to be enrolled in tracks that don't provide opportunities for employment. You wind up with a separate discriminating impact for selection and tracking. And of course, the absence of compulsory education laws have been mentioned before. In terms of the lack of schooling, many excluded groups live in rural areas. Their communities may lack any school at all. And where they do exist, they typically lack suitable facilities, textbooks, and instructional materials. Difficulties in placing teachers in remote areas results in less qualified or knowledgeable teachers, or as we've heard, absent teachers who work in these areas, and a consequence of less instructional time. There are studies from Laos, for example, that show that rural schools serving language minority groups were less well-provisioned than were rural schools serving the dominant Lao Thai ethnic group. In Africa, rural schools had fewer instructional materials for reading, and their teachers scored less well on tests of reading. And what we see is that girls who wind up attending poor schools are singularly more likely to drop out than boys are. They seem to be more sensitive to variations in school quality. And then there is this issue of the weak demand for education, where we have cultural considerations that we've talked about, parents wishing to keep children out of school, the costs of schooling, concerns about the safety and security of girls, particularly when distance poses a barrier to access to education. And this issue about the perceived returns to education and discrimination in the labor market, all of which differentially affect the socially excluded girls relative to the socially excluded boys. So I turn quickly to what has worked for socially excluded girls, and not surprisingly, it falls into three areas, some administrative and legal reforms, some education reform, and some incentives. Clearly, taking a look at administrative rules and fixing them is very important. And others have spoken more about laws about discrimination, and I won't go further on that one. Education reform to diversify and improve the school supply is particularly important, and considerable evidence suggests that targeting these efforts toward the communities in which the socially excluded children live have enormous benefits. We've talked about early education and bilingual and mother tongue instruction. Ensuring the school basics. I can't overemphasize this. These schools where these children go to school are just abominable, and you've seen some pictures of schools that would fall into that category today. And what we find is that when additional resources have been specifically targeted to these schools, and with respect to the schools that have the poorest performance, that the achievement gap that's been observed between indigenous and non-indigenous children declines significantly, so that and the girls don't drop out. So just improving the quality of the inputs to schools is really important. Community schools, people have mentioned before already. Compensatory programs, I think the work that was described by Abhijit earlier has been shown to be enormously effective and has had strong positive effects, particularly for girls. And I would say one thing that hasn't been mentioned. In countries where girls are excluded, where girls are secluded for cultural reasons, particularly adolescent girls, distance education can be very effective. Radio instruction can reach remote rural communities and has been effective in teaching reading, math, and science in dozens of countries. In Mexico and Central America, Telesecundaria uses television and the internet to educate students in rural communities that lack lower secondary schools, where many indigenous girls lack opportunities. And these are things that can be considered. I won't spend much time on incentives. Conditional cash transfers that essentially provide households resources to engage in desirable behavior, such as enrolling and keeping their children in school, have been evaluated extensively and found effective in Latin America, particularly girls' scholarship programs and linkages of secondary schools with the labor market. And I don't mean vocational training. I just mean things that are more generally broad, like the parents' demand for education in the English medium in India, or computer skills that we have seen in other countries provide an opportunity for children to go ahead. And this information about returns to labor market comes up again and again as being very, very important. So I just quickly want to talk about cost, because what I've suggested here is that to reach these socially excluded girls is going to require more money. And these kinds of costs have been estimated by the World Bank, UNICEF, various groups. And they're much more than what current levels of external aid. And I'll give you one example here. In this example, these are some numbers that came from the World Bank and from the economist Paul Glebe. If you were to institute a program of conditional cash transfers in Nicaragua, the cost for the program would be considerably higher, as you can see by the blue bar relative to the turquoise bar. The amount of domestic resources that the bank estimated could be mobilized to pay for improving the quality of schooling is about equal. Do I get some? These are really cool graphs, too. But I'll talk on. Okay. It's the old unplugged computer problem. Ran out of resources. Fortunately, it doesn't cost too much to plug it in. Can I have one more minute?
Indeed.
Though it is somewhat, I'm glad that it's happening, because for all of you who work overseas, you know this happens all the time. And so, you know, for a long time, we were still taking filmy transparencies to go on overhead projectors, because we know that the computers wouldn't work. I didn't think I needed to bring that to Canada, but then maybe. Okay, it's getting up here. Hey, it's all right, it happens. Well, let me just talk. The World Bank estimated that you would need $71 million annually to get all children in Nicaragua in school by building more schools, improving the quality of those schools, and improving their efficiency. And the World Bank estimated that you could mobilize resources, leaving only about a $2 million resource gap. But since a lot of these kids are out of school, and what seems to work in getting the kids to school has been these conditional cash transfers, Paul Glevy argues that, assuming half the kids needed a CCT, these would be the children in the rural areas who would need to be induced to come to stay in school. Providing this subsidy, which would be approximately $112 annually to 150,000 children, would cost about $17 million annually. This would be over and above and beyond estimates of the best ability to generate resources, mobilize resources domestically, and would create a $19 million annual funding gap, which was nearly 10 times. This speed reading. Which would be basically 10 times more than what had been initially represented. If we applied the same kind of analysis to a couple of countries in each of three regions, my point is that in countries with a high level of socially excluded groups, who are greatly heterogeneous with respect to ethnic and linguistic diversity, that the funding gap becomes quite enormous. And the cost of the size of this financing gap is very much higher in the countries where there are more socially excluded groups. Not just that there are more groups out of school, but because they require additional incremental resources to get in school, that the funding gap is even higher. How big is the funding gap? Well, the annual cost to enable the 14 million out of school, the 40 million out of school girls to complete primary school. We see a wide range in estimates, and basically the estimates are in sharp contrast to the external aid that's available, which is about $5 billion. So these are billions of dollars, and about $5 billion. And so I think I have one more slide. No, I do not. I have one more slide. So I just wanted to wrap up by simply saying that the main challenge for gender equity in particular is this challenge of reaching the girls from socially excluded groups. And there are a number of barriers that keep these girls out of school, that to get them into school requires additional efforts beyond the business as usual. And I say donors can help. The point is, it's going to cost more. It's not going to cost less.